The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Do long-distance relationships work? It's the age-old question when it comes to love. And while long-distance relationships generally do work out, apparently couples who travel long distances have high divorce rates, at least that's among the bird population. And it's our first topic in the Green Scene with Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Ruth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So who's looking at the birds?
Well, some researchers from China decided to look at birds to see what happens when they have to split up to migrate and go and find food after they've bred. And actually, most birds are socially monogamous, which means they pair up, they have chicks together, and they work together to bring up those chicks. And they do that year after year. About 90% of them do that. But of course, migration comes in then, because birds often breed in one place, but then when winter kicks in, they have to leave to find food.
And they don't fly together.
They don't fly together. They head off separately. And then in this amazing sort of migration biology, they manage to find their way back. But researchers decided to see, well, what happens when they do that? So researchers in China looked at about 230 bird species which are socially monogamous but also migrate. And they found, again, not surprisingly, a correlation between the distance of the migration and how likely the birds were to get back together again and stay together in the next season.
Now, there could be all sorts of reasons. For example, if you're travelling a really long way, maybe your navigation is not that great and you actually can't find your partner when you come back.
Sure. And I mean, a long journey is going to be more treacherous. You might get hunted, you might meet a predator along the way, you might be more likely to be blown off course. And of course, it depends on the size of where you're coming back to as well. But of course, as with all things, you know, so we had some birds that really never seemed to manage to find the same partner again. So the great blue heron has the highest divorce rate, essentially 100%, never manages to find the same partner again. But again, for the heron, they have this 3,000 kilometre migration. They go, we see them here in Europe, they go down as far as the Caribbean, the Pacific. And of course, if you get back first, as a bird, it's very risky to wait, because what if your mate doesn't come back? What if they have been killed? And, you know, you have to balance up your energy requirements to go and find somebody new, which, you know, could be exhausting, versus hanging around and then maybe your partner doesn't come back. So, of course, evolution is driving all of this behaviour.
Now, birds then, where the partner doesn't deliver the goods. I mean, if the female is not having fertilised eggs because the partner's not up to it, do they immediately search for someone else?
Birds do. They'll move on pretty quickly, and particularly when they have short breeding seasons. I mean, remember, they have to be gone from the place that they're breeding when the cold weather starts. The chicks have to be fed and able to manage. So there's a lot of tight constraints on bird breeding.
Some birds will have multiple partners even in the one breeding season.
That's right. So at the other extreme, the most promiscuous little bird that has ever been found is the saltwater sparrow. This is a little bird that's found in Connecticut. And here, 95% of females will mate with more than one male during the nesting period. And nearly every clutch of eggs has more than one father. And again, this is really interesting, probably driven by evolution. These birds live in areas with very prone to flooding and high tides. So they can lose a whole nest in a very high tide, and they can't hang around. That's halfway through the breeding season, and they can't wait to see who are the good men. So they literally just have to not put all their eggs in one basket, get back out there and get a new clutch of eggs laid.
Now, what about those birds that are absolutely faithful unto death?
I know. And we spoke about Milena and Klepetan, those lovely Croatian storks, on the programme before. But we have one of those here, the black-tailed godwits. We have them here in Ireland, and they manage to stay together despite a 1,000 kilometre migration. They seem to have an amazing, uncanny ability to synchronise getting back to exactly the same place
at
exactly the same time. So I think, as humans in long distance relationships will say, timing and staying in touch is the key.
It's fascinating stuff. Now, there has been an effort to monitor wildlife in the Wicklow area. What have they been doing?
Yeah, I mean, we talked again about monitoring populations, and do we know what's even going on? And it's a real challenge for researchers to see exactly how many animals we have, how many birds. It's why people like Birdwatch Ireland have surveys to get the public to help. And one of the best ways to do that is to have camera traps. It's the idea you set up cameras in remote locations and they're tuned to snap when they hear movement. And this captures what's walking past, and then scientists can count the species. But we don't actually do this in Ireland. So it's very hard for us to know what's out there. But in Wicklow, researchers set up 20 camera traps, and they counted everything that came. And it's revealed revealed some pretty interesting data. They were able to find about over 1,000 animals, what you'd expect, red squirrels, the odd pine marten, lots of foxes, some red deer. But actually over 700 of the individual animals that they saw were Sika deer. And that's, okay. I know you've talked about deer before. It is a problem because they are an invasive species.
Who brought them in?
So they came in to the Powers Court estate in Wicklow in around the mid 19th century, but they've probably been deliberately spread to other places as well. They haven't just spread themselves because they're pretty widespread now. But it is problematic because they don't naturally chime with our biodiversity. They damage small saplings and our native trees, and clearly they're doing very well here. So again, as we said, There's always the detail behind the numbers. Even though some species may be not doing well, others are doing great, and sometimes it's not the ones you necessarily want to be expanding.
So what are the lessons then from this? Because people will resent the idea of a cull. We know they do interbreed with the native red deer. Could they drive them to extinction?
I mean, they could. That's certainly an issue. And I mean, look, we've talked, there's lots of potential solutions. They're all complicated. None of them are easy. I mean, rewilding, potentially reintroducing a predator like the wolf, culling, you know, there's all sorts of things. None of them are simple, but we need the data so we know what we can do.
Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.